us. I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Warm Down. Today, joining me is Wayne Barton, Manchester United author, and he's written an absolutely belting book about a man that I don't think gets enough respect, love, recognition, all the rest of those things, Jimmy Murphy. Wayne, tell us about why you chose to write about Jimmy Murphy.
Good question. I've been lucky enough to work with a few former Reds on other books, and particularly in the sort of post-Ferguson era, there's been all this talk about United losing their identity or moving away from it. And those conversations are great when you're talking to former players and everything like that. And one name kept coming up, and that's obviously Jimmy. I had a great conversation with Mike Duxbury when we were doing his book, and he basically said that they were at a player's do one time, and Jimmy came up to him, and he needed no introduction. He obviously knew who Jimmy was, and Jimmy said that he would have graced the Babes side. When Mike was telling me that, he got really emotional. And I thought, well, that must, you know what I mean? That's quite an impact to have, like, some 20-odd years after. I mean, probably 30 years after that had actually been said. So, I mean, I was aware, as most people are, of the basics of Jimmy Murphy. You know, he was the youth team coach and he took over after Munich. But I thought that there was more that needed to be told. It seemed like there was more. So I thought, you know, I'll have a little bit of a dig around. And then it became a passion, really. I just, you know, every conversation I could have with anyone who was associated with United was about Jimmy, as much as I could make it, anyway.
Well, we've named one of the centres at Carrington after Jimmy Murphy, but it's not really enough recognition for what the man did. Can you explain for the people who don't know enough about Jimmy exactly why? Because I'm pretty much in the same camp as you. I think this is a guy that, if we was to build a youth stadium, it should be named the Jimmy Murphy Stadium or something along those lines. Why is he so important to United's history?
Yeah, so Jimmy would take them to his family and they would feel like part of his family. You know, that's where the extra motivation came from on a Saturday afternoon, Saturday morning. You know, they'd want to work harder for Jimmy. They'd want to impress him. Jimmy, obviously, he would get involved on the training pitch and everything like that. He was a big believer in developing players as people as well. So they would go on to be good young men as well as good players. So I think there was a lot of that. I mean, I remember some of these players like Bobby Charlton and Duncan Edwards were coming away from home, the Irish lads as well. So they were trusting Jimmy with, you know, looking after their well-being. Well, they were trusting the club, but most of that responsibility came down to Jimmy.
It's so different to nowadays, isn't it? Because obviously you've got players that have got social media, they can speak to their family at any time that they want. There's not an issue with communicating with back home. In the 50s, you're talking about people writing letters that's going to take a couple of weeks to get a return on that letter and stuff, aren't you? People would have been homesick really instantly, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was all kinds of things that would be done to sort of look after them. I mean, they'd buddy them up with different players and everything like that. So infamous stories about George Best, who was being sent back to his landlady up until his early 20s to be looked after. Do you know what I mean? They were doing all sorts of stuff to look after these players. Sammy McElroy was another famous one. I mean, that's a bit after Jimmy's time. But it's the same kind of process. You know, George Best, I think, was homesick for a little bit. You know, so these were common problems, and it was revolutionary at the time what United were doing, you know, in terms of looking after these players. And obviously, by the time that reputation was going into the first team, they'd already caught a step on everyone else. So when, like Wolves, for example, they wanted to imitate it, but United already had the reputation of doing that. So, you know, they were always a step behind. And really, I mean, that's just a little bit of, well, you know, that's the early part of what Jimmy was doing. If you imagine he was doing that for 6 or 7 years, well, maybe 5 or 6 years before it started to bear fruit into the first team. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't get that kind of patience these days anyway, but the fact that they did have that patience and the rewards that it was reaping, and then sort of Jimmy's reputation snowballed out of nowhere, really, because it was sort of like they started winning these youth cups and they started getting into the first team, and then he was offered the Wales job and everything like that, and he was promoted to assistant manager, even though he was sort of working 80-hour weeks anyway. I mean, his family would joke that if he had a bed at Old Trafford, he would have lived there. I think, I mean, Matt Busby obviously loved Manchester United, but in those early years before Munich, nothing meant more to Jimmy Murphy than Manchester United. They were sort of they were his thing, do you know, and really Manchester United was a representation of everything that of all of Jimmy Murphy's values, more than they were. I mean, Matt Busby had them playing entertaining football, and they got that reputation for that, don't get me wrong, but everything about the character of that side, you know, their slight arrogance on the ball, their dogged determination. And then obviously there's the work that he did in the Munich disaster, which everybody is sort of well aware of. You know, he sort of took hold of the reins after Sir Matt was in hospital and everything like that. But that's not the start of most people's journeys with Jimmy Murphy. They believe that that's when he sort of stepped in. But the influence that he'd had on the club beforehand was incredibly great and cannot be overstated.
We didn't buy a player from, was it 54 till post Munich, did we?
Harry Gregg. Harry Gregg was signed just before Munich. So December 1957. But I mean, really, that's the sort of common pattern with United. I don't know if it's a curse or something, but we never really seem to develop first class standard goalkeepers or first class standard attackers. They're always defenders and midfielders, aren't they? Do you know, I know they're the odd exception, like, you know, Marcus Rashford, hopefully, and Sam Johnstone's doing really well as well. And there have been the odd players that have slipped through the cracks through the years, but generally,
more defenders than you can shake a stick at, more midfielders than you can say, well, a whole midfield really for the class of 92 and 93 lads.
Oh yeah, I mean, what can you do with that sort of stuff? I always felt like United were unfairly bashed for that. I mean, A, because they were like, well, what have they done since the class of 92? Like, well, what has anyone else done?
Regardless of the class of 92, yeah. You're absolutely right, yeah. I do think it's something that hangs over us at the moment. There's those two absolute mountains, isn't there? There's the Busby Babes, there's the class of 92, and then even when you're bringing through the likes of Mark Hughes and Norman Whiteside and Rashford and Cleverley and Welbeck, international footballers that are doing great things at club level, because they're not Ballon d'Or winning David Beckhams and Ryan Giggses and players like this, apparently the academy system's broken.
That United side in the 50s, they were lined up with players who were that good. I mean, you've got your Duncan Edwards, whose reputation speaks for himself. Bobby Charlton, who, again, his reputation speaks for himself. But David Pegg was a brilliant player. Eddie Coleman was so underrated. Roger Byrne was a great captain. All of these were world-class players. I mean, at the time, the transfer record was something like £25,000. And Busby joked that he had £200,000 worth of talent waiting to come through, which is effectively six or seven players. What he was saying were coming into first team, which were the best in Britain, which was a bold claim, but he was right, obviously, because they all did come through. And United, within 2 years of that claim, two or three years, they were being described as the best team in the world.
It's not a bad prediction, was it? How did Sir Matt and Jimmy Murphy meet each other?
So Matt, they'd come up against each other as players, and they were, because they were both midfielders or played in the midfield area. I mean, Jimmy was a half-back defensive midfielder, and I think Sir Matt was a more attacking player. Jimmy held a lot of respect for Matt as a player. But they were both in the war, and it was at the back end of the war. Jimmy was commissioned somewhere in Italy, in Bari. That's where they met each other again, where they bumped into each other. There was a coaching session that Jimmy was leading before effectively a friendly game with the sports people who were in the camp and some soldiers. And Busby had just been given the United job, but he was out there as a sports person. And he saw Jimmy taking this training session as if it was the FA Cup final. Like, everything depends on this game. And he went up to say, his thing was, you know, I must have this guy. If he thinks this is life or death, then this is the kind of guy I need at United. And he went and said, I've got a job for you when you're demobbed. And the rest is history. You know, that's he went back to Old Trafford after the war.
If we talk about I was going to say the evolution, but essentially the birth of the Babes comes from internal recruitment and a little bit of scouting. Jimmy wasn't just a trainer in the Carlos Queiroz sense, was he? Or the Rennie Mullenstein sense. But he also went and recruited and scouted these players, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, United had scouts. They had eyes all over the country. But you would have those regional scouts. And then Jimmy was partly responsible for setting that network up. You know, they would find people, school teachers and things like that, because Jimmy wanted to be a teacher. So he trusted the teachers and he would go and talk to them and everything like that. It's incredible that, I mean, Tony Parker, who you will know, I mean, he knows this kind of stuff more than me, the sort of level of intensive scouting that went on. But they left no stone unturned. And when you think about it, they were working from a blank page at that time. You know, these were things that they were making up, you know, to go and get, I mean, schoolboys, they had to have jobs waiting for them at Old Trafford in case they didn't make it. So they had to do all these sort of skullduggery kind of things to try and convince parents to let their kids come. And then to convince the kids that, you know, they would have a good career and everything like that. And Jimmy was involved with that. But he kind of liked the idea of using Matt Busby as a demigod. You know, like, sort of like, you think I'm going to impress you? Well, wait until you see Matt Busby, because Matt Busby, oh, he's the most incredible person you'll ever meet and everything like that. I mean, normally it wouldn't take Matt to convince a player to sign, but for the big guns like Duncan Edwards or someone like that, they'd send Sir Matt Busby down there, you know, to sweet talk the parents and everything like that. But a lot of the time, I mean, Busby's quite majorly credited with convincing Charlton to sign as a kid, but Murphy went up and spoke to Bobby Charlton's dad on his level as someone from a mining background, and he said, look, I know your son's moving away and I know that you've got concerns about it, but I'm from the same background as you and I promise you we'll look after him. So it's, even though Jimmy didn't credit himself with that, you know, he didn't give himself the credit for Bobby signing, I certainly give him the credit for that, because, you know, he's speaking to the parents on their level more than just the bravado of getting the best football manager and saying, look, these are the riches that await you. He's speaking to them in a real human way of saying, look, there are no guarantees in football, but the one guarantee that I can give you in life is that we're going to look after him the best that we can, and I've got his best interests at heart, which, if you think about it from that point of view, at that time when, I guess, it's changing lifestyles for everyone after the war, that and they're sending the kids away, it's a big ask. So it's a big leap of faith and trust that they were placing in him.
So Matt Busby is credited with really igniting what we sort of adhere to, or we try to adhere to now, of this United way, that you have to be successful, but you have to be entertaining. There's a pressure to entertain and be successful at the same time. That comes directly from Sir Matt Busby. But the tools for what Sir Matt Busby can do come through Jimmy Murphy's work. Now, what is it you think that Jimmy Murphy had in his character, in his skill set, that made him be able to turn these rough diamonds of players that clearly show promise in the local scene, like Bobby Charlton, like Duncan Edwards, and turn them into genuine world-class talents that are winning Ballon d'Ors and being nominated for Ballon d'Or at 20 years of age, which is... It probably could happen now, but I think the level of football that there was then, and the perception about football being such a man's game, which is one of the reasons why the Babes got the name the Babes. What do you think it was that Jimmy Murphy was doing in training that elevated these? Was he just a bit of a revolutionary? Was he a bit ahead of his time, do you think?
Yeah, a little bit of that, but also the value of the simple things. I mean, if you know, that any recollection or revision of Jimmy's philosophies of coaching always boil down to the, you know, simple things and repetition. Pass the ball, move it quickly, and make sure that, you know, we're on, try and make a positive pass and everything like that. Guard your teammate. All these simple philosophies that, you know, that people try and overcomplicate these days with, you know, over elaborate tactics or over elaborate descriptions and everything. Jimmy was all about keeping it simple. But also, I mean, the genius part, which, I mean, we later saw, you know, we witnessed, you and I, in our lifetime with the class of 92, is the cohesion that comes with playing that many players together, coming through the ranks together. That's partly why they were so successful. So you've got 6 or 7 players all coming together. They're all familiar from the ages of 13 or 14, 16, 17. They're going through that big time period where they're all familiar with each other's movements. They all become more familiar with that. Now, if you can imagine that, you've got youth team level, reserve team level. So you've probably got 30 or 40 players who are all familiar with that kind of pattern. And all that was sort of given with the simple instruction, what Jimmy was giving to them, you know. So it's not that there was anything genius that, you know, you would read it and think, oh my God, that's, you know, we've unlocked the secret forever. But it's all about patience, determination, and simplicity, really. And that was the value in it. I mean, and the expression, that, you know, express yourself. Don't be afraid to take a chance. But it would be about smartly doing that, doing it in an intelligent way. I mean, the stories of legend of him taking Bobby Charlton onto the Old Trafford pitch after a Saturday, and if he did a crossfield pass that he thought was wasteful, he'd make him hit 50-yard passes across the pitch and go and collect them back and then say, do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. And then obviously the famous story of taking him back on the back of the Stretford end and kicking with both feet to practice that. And obviously there was no one more proficient at shooting with both feet from distance than Bobby Charlton. There were simple tools, but it was sort of like if you keep your head about you and you adhere to all these kind of things, then if you've got the talent to go along with that, then the world really is your oyster. I mean, Duncan Edwards is famously the one who needed least teaching, but I'm pretty sure that if he was alive or if you read any recollection from Duncan Edwards, he would say that the teachings of Jimmy Murphy were valuable as well.
Darkest day in United's history, 6th of February 1958. Jimmy Murphy's away with Wales because of the recognition he's getting as an individual, managing the Welsh national team, which was a great team at the time as well. It wasn't a also-ran nation at the time, was it? It was a very good side. Jimmy's not there, survives the crash, obviously escapes the crash entirely. The title of your book, Keep the Red Flag Flying High, he actually said, or Sir Matt Busby actually said those words to Jimmy Murphy, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, incredible sentences. I mean, that's, it seems almost like a cliche, doesn't it? Do you know?
Well, it's one of our greatest songs for me. It's my favourite United song, is the Red Flags. And yeah, to know that he actually said those words to Jimmy Murphy, who definitely did what he was asked in those circumstances.
I wonder, though, and this is my thing, I wonder if Matt knew what he was asking Jimmy to do, because obviously all the reports of Busby was, and I should stop calling him Matt as if he's my best friend, I don't, you know, Sir Matt or Busby. He asked Jimmy this, but he was in a very bad way, Sir Matt, at the time. He didn't know, and nobody knew if he was going to live or die. I mean, he was read the last rites a couple of times, and he wasn't allowed to be told who'd passed away, who'd made it. It was a few days, a few weeks before he was told the severity. So he's telling Jimmy to keep the flag flying. What is he really asking him to do? He's asking him to go back and look after everything as it is. He has no idea. Maybe he's got some idea that, you know, I'm in a bad way, some other guy's going to be in a bad way, but he's not going to know the true extent of what he's asking Jimmy to do. And really, I don't think Jimmy would have, you know, if he hadn't had that specific direction to do that, I don't think he would have known what to do. But because he had this immense loyalty to Busby, he said, well, yeah, I'll do that because I've got an idea. You've told me what to do. That's my instruction. You know, it's something that I can actually focus on. And it is. It's incredible to think that without that simple sentence, that the club that we know and that we follow, that in its current identity, even if it had carried on, everything that it stands for might be completely different.
I don't even think we can imagine what would have happened if we'd have allowed, or if we, like, we had any part to play in it, if Jimmy Murphy had allowed the club to close down like they wished to for the end of that 58 season. Could it even be possible to rebuild from that point? I'm not sure it could have been. I certainly don't think within 10 years we'd have been European champions. I watched an interview with Sir Matt earlier this week, actually, and it's a brilliant interview that you don't really get on television anymore. And Sir Matt says he wanted to die when he found out that the players had started to passed away and the severity of actually what had happened. And he said it was only his wife coming and saying, you've got a job to do.
Yeah.
That spurred him on to go and do what he did. But so Matt literally saying, I'm in hospital in Munich and I just went, I don't want to live anymore. I want to die. This is everything we've worked for. It's gone completely. And I think with the spirit and determination that Jimmy Murphy's shown, recruiting players, G'ing everybody up, and taking us to an FA Cup final with no team, I don't even think words can do that justice, can they?
No, and you're quite right with that, with the reference to Samat there and saying that, he felt so guilty. I think completely misplaced, but obviously it's understandable that what he was going through. If Jimmy hadn't carried on, there's no way Busby would have been convinced to go back, because he would have been, what would he have been going back to? Mm-hmm. At least it was ticking along while he was away. He was getting the results. People were telling him the results. United are playing tonight. They've won in the cup again, So he was feeling the encouragement from that. I mean, for some of those games, obviously, he didn't even know that, the players weren't there. Some of the players weren't there. So I don't think he would have been convinced to go back as well. Bobby Charlton credits Jimmy. There's a scene in the film United, which isn't, I don't think it's overdone or anything like that. I think it's actually, as it happened, Jimmy had to go and convince Bobby Charlton to play again. If Jimmy hadn't done that, then you've got 769 appearances or whatever, it's 756 or something, or of this legend, this symbol of United for so long that wouldn't have existed. So, I mean, would they have carried on as a club? They may well have done. They might have had to, maybe they might have been relegated or been asked to start again from a lower division, to sort of come back. And, the journey might have been just as romantic. Who knows where it might have led? But certainly the United that we know, and particularly keeping on the even keel as they did to survive in the first division, and then, win the FA Cup by 1963, win the league title again, and like I said, European Cup 10 years later. I mean, it's a miracle in sporting and human achievement, really. It's nothing short of a miracle.
I think that's what my granddad's got a great line in something I did with him. I've done a couple of podcasts with him and the Munich documentary we did. And he's got a great line in there somehow. He said, before Munich, United was Manchester's. After Munich, we belonged to the whole world. And I think that journey from absolute rock bottom, this team that's been absolutely devastated, it makes no difference whether there was a good team or not. The human loss is still relevant, isn't it? But I think the fact that they were such a promised side, a side that was at the top of its game, it adds that little bit of romanticism to it. What might have been? Where could this team have gone? What could they have achieved? So to go back and start again, there's another line that Busby mentions in this interview, which is a great interview. I might actually do a whole video just looking at this interview because it's so good. And he says the players was ghosts around Old Trafford. They hung around Old Trafford everywhere. He would think he'd seen them in places and stuff. I can't even imagine what he'd go through. What was Jimmy's role in the immediate aftermath of all of this happening? He took on the mantle of not just managing the team, but he had to go and find essentially a new club, didn't he? We lost coaches, we lost players, we lost backroom staff, it's incalculable what we lost, really.
And, I mean, these lads, I mean, they weren't just young players who we'd lost. Like I said earlier, they'd be taken around to his family, he'd taken them in. They were like his own. And so there was not only that loss, but Bert Wally was his best friend. So that was his right-hand man. He didn't know what to do. Walter Crickmer died, and he was the one who, when he hired Busby and Murphy, he was effectively the guy who had the mastermind for the youth team plan and everything like that. So even the blueprint, the guy who had the blueprint was gone. So he was basically starting, not again, because he had some idea of what he was doing. They'd been working on it for 10 years as they were, but it's incredibly difficult. So, I mean, where do you start? What do you do? He could have easily been forgiven for just ripping up everything that they'd done before and just doing what he could to survive. He could have easily gone out and bought 11 players and started again. He didn't. What the best thing about the best story in it all was that, Puskas was linked with United. And there was Jimmy was a big fan because he was a massive fan of Hungarian football, and he was sort of following the revolution before it happened. And a lot of his own teachings were from Jimmy Hogan, who was an Hungarian coach in the 30s. So he just studied that, and he'd been ahead of the curve with that anyway. So he's a big fan of the Hungarian players. And Puskas was one who sort of came out and said, "I'll offer my services to United." Now, United's weekly wage, I think, was about £20. Oh, no, the maximum wage in England was about £20. And United's maximum in that was about £16. Now, when Puskas went to Real Madrid, I think he was on about £800 later that year. Yeah. So even if United had got the money, even if he had said, I'll play for free, then they've got the British passport ban. You know, only British and Irish players could play for English clubs at the time. So there's all this red tape to go through. And he could have done that, and he could have persevered with that because he really loved this player, and nobody would have cared. And he could have done that with any number of players as well. But when he was sort of realising the difficulty of, I mean, it was very early negotiations, we're talking like 2 days of Puskas was linked, and Jimmy would have thought about it. And he decided, you know what, we'll just do this the way that we did before. As tough as it's going to be, we're going to do what we've always done, and that's give the young players a chance. The most remarkable thing for me is that the team that plays against Sheffield Wednesday, Harry Gregg signed, and you've got Ernie Taylor and Stan Crowther, and the rest are still United kids. That is, you talk about, oh, they had a scratch side and everything, but it was still eight United kids, and that's probably why, I mean, Wednesday didn't stand a chance, did they, when, you know, they were playing against 70,000 people that night. They weren't playing against 11. Because that's the incalculable thing, what giving young players a chance means to United is, you know, the crowd just gets behind them, they'll forgive them mistakes. We saw it against Palace at the back end of last season. I mean, this dead rubber game that means nothing, and the crowd are more up for it than, I mean, they were as up for it as they were the Liverpool game earlier that season. Do you know what I mean? Just because of what it was. And it's like that intangible thing that, you know, everyone goes on about Anfield and European nights, but that's something that United have got. So why doesn't Jose Mourinho see that and bottle it? Because it's a great thing, though, and that's what United had then. And I'm not sure that Jimmy was counting on that, because I don't think he could have known how anyone was going to react. I mean, he was just putting a side together, but it's still a remarkable thing. A decision that he made to say, well, what we'll do is we'll just do this the same way we always did, as generous as it is of these guys like Liverpool and Forest who were offering players. Only the reserves mind. They get a lot of credit for offering players, but they're offering reserves. And Jimmy's idea, well, we've got reserve players. We don't need reserve players. We need top quality players. So maybe there was a little bit of this forestand in that as well. You know, well, if we're going to be relying on reserve players, we'll rely on our own. And the other thing to remember is that those players weren't without talent. You know, as difficult as it was and as remarkable as their achievement was, they were still talented kids. It was just, I mean, you see the likes of Alec Dawson, who came in. It was a perfect example. A great prospect. He did so well in that aftermath. And then his career, even though he had a really good goal-scoring record, his career sort of fizzled out because it was too much too soon. These players who came into the first team missed a step in their development, most of them. You know, the reserve, they were youth team players, and they missed the toughening up period in the reserve. So they had the talent, they just fizzled out, you know, a lot of them did anyway. And a lot of them carried on, like Shea Brennan, for example. But it was absolute, I can't even, people ask how did they do it? And that's the question you can't answer, because how did they do it? You know, you'd love to know, because it's just remarkable what they did.
If we knew, we'd be able to repeat it, I think. But I think that's probably, I think the game's a slightly different game. I think if we could, but to be fair to United, we do. We've kept that youth run going since 1938. And I think Jose's been told, you better keep that going. You might only be here for 5 minutes, but that's an 80-year-old record. We can't replace it. You better adhere to it. Listen, Wayne, this was absolutely fantastic. I've enjoyed this. I'll throw a link to the description about this book, because I'm only a couple of chapters into this at the moment and I'm really loving it. I think Jimmy Murphy's a figure in Manchester United history that he needs his storytelling or retelling. I think Nobby Styles is the same, actually. I think Nobby Styles' story really needs to be brought back up. He seems to have been buried under a few others. Listen, Wayne, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you guys at home go and check out Wayne's book about Jimmy Murphy. The link is in the description below. Listen, Jimmy Murphy is a real legend of Manchester United. We might not have the club that we have today if it wasn't for this great man. So please go and learn a little bit about him. Check Wayne's link in the description. Go give him a follow on Twitter, and I will see you in the next one. Laters.